It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
You're listening to Steve Bloomer's Washing Derby County podcast, checking in on the Rams' fortunes after a first handful of games where it has been mixed, to say the least. A first away win at Burton Albion, the curse of the Pirelli finally lifted, but three home defeats, which saw Paul Warne's Rams booed off several times in August before that essential first Pride Park win over Fleetwood Town this weekend. But still, a start that none of us were really hoping for and which few expected. There are gaps in the squad, early season injuries. There are academy stars who look like they could be off. Things haven't quite gone to plan, have they? So joining me, Chris Parsons, to ask what on earth is going on. He's had his head turned, but he's SBW through and through. It's Richard Kutcher. Hello.
Hi, Chris. Yeah, no head turning here. Very happy. Got a glass of red wine, got some Tony's Chocolonely, and 3 points in the bag for the mighty Rams.
What a Saturday night. And he was so disgusted by Derby's early season performances at Pride Park that he decided to flee the country. Dialing in from sunny Spain, it's Tom Martin. Buenas noches to you, sir.
Oh, buenas noches, everyone. It's lovely to be here. I have got a proper passport, so I'll be able to get back in the country, much to the disappointment of our fans, I'm sure. But yeah, lovely to chat to you with 3 points in the bag today.
You were giving us some trivia before we started about some Derby County related trivia about Mallorca, weren't you? Let's hear it.
Yeah, so last night Villarreal played Mallorca at Mallorca, and there was a random ex-Derby player, Omar Mascarell, was playing in centre midfield. He got booked, the game was awful, and Villarreal won 1-0 with Gerard Moreno scoring in the 62nd minute. So yeah, not one for the purists, but Omar Mascarell, you might remember him for being rubbish and giving the ball away a lot.
That's exactly what I remember him for. Let's move on swiftly. I don't think any of us can improve on that contribution to his Derby County career. So look, five word reviews on Derby County 1, Fleetwood Town 0, a first home win of the season. We had a few on our Patreon over on the Discord from Chris Getty. Don't sack Paul Warne yet. Kurt Lewin said, on the road to recovery. Chris Hill said, Rooney and Thompson seize opportunity. Michael Durkin, Shustoke Rams, said, no back five again, please. And Pete Lee, he came in with two. I'm going to choose to read that second one, which was all aboard the promotion bus, Richard Kutcher. I think Pete's been on the gin, but what a relief that result was today.
It was, yeah. I think we had a bit of a debate on the Discord pre-match about almost kind of what was more important, the result or the performance. I know Anton said, you know, obviously would love to get 3 points, but for him, he just wanted to see an improved performance. And a lot of people agreed with that. And I think that's important. To be honest, I think we got a result, but not a great performance. We kind of had a decent first half. But ultimately, just I think getting away with a result was actually really, really important and was probably the most important thing today, just to settle people down. There's another week or so to go on the window. And I just think it kind of calms the situation down a little bit, because it was all getting a bit toxic, to be honest, the last few weeks. So I think personally it was an overreaction. It's not been great, but right, we've got two wins. We've only lost once on a Saturday so far, so it's not all bad. And we've got mostly Saturday games to come.
That's the real quiz. Tom, I'm going to put something to you that Kutch just sort of mentioned in passing when we when we beat Burton. So yeah, the hugely disappointing home results against Wigan and Blackpool and Oxford. Then we beat Burton and then we won again today. Are we a good team in this division or not? How do you read into that early season form?
Oh, Chris, it's really frustrating. Yes, we are a good team. We've got some good players in that team. If you think about like Connor Howard, and then you've got like Wildsmith is a good goalkeeper. Cashin is like a really top-rated centre-back. Max Bird, a brilliant centre midfielder. Mendes Lang is a dangerous player at this sort of level as well. So yes, we are a good team. I just think we're a little bit lacking of a bit of sharpness, a bit of quality in terms of going forward. We don't haven't necessarily looked like scoring from open play. And actually, if you look at the game, so if you go back to the Wigan game, we were arguably the better team and we made two horrendous errors. We made errors against Blackpool and then were obviously devoid of confidence. And that can often go when you've prepared for so long and actually had pretty good pre-season in terms of results and performances. You make those mistakes, really naive, stupid mistakes in the first game. It just felt like the Derby team was like shot of confidence and then didn't really know how to react to things. So yes, I can't believe that people are even considering. It's been really frustrating on social media, but I can't believe people are considering like Paul Warne needs to go or needs to come out, and we needed to win today. It's a must win. Every game should be winnable at this level for Derby. Like, we're a big side, good team, and I know that sounds arrogant saying it, but at the same time, we've got to have our aspirations high. But at the same time, we don't need to have a meltdown every time we lose or we don't win. It's really frustrating. I think fans need to take a bit of perspective and realise that this is August. I'm not even off the summer holidays yet.
It's yeah, I see where you're coming from, and we'll come on to the wider repercussions of Derby's performances and the sort of fan opinion. But in terms of this weekend, I appreciate what you're saying that like it wasn't technically a must win, but it just felt cutch to me for the sake of my own sanity and as you said, the toxicity of things on social media, which we all know isn't the be all and end all. But even without looking at Twitter, Derby got booed off at half-time against Oxford in a manner that I genuinely haven't really seen for quite a long time, let alone in August. So, yeah, look, we got the job done today, off the mark for the season at home, thanks to Martin Waghorn's second goal in as many games. But my word, we were hanging on towards the end of that game today. I know it was the result was all that mattered. The performance wasn't perfect, and it was at least a huge improvement on and reaction to Oxford. But like Kutch, let's not pretend it was convincing today, was it?
It wasn't convincing, but the first half was good. The first half was good. I know that Stockley hit the woodwork in the first half, but the first half was really good. And I thought it was a real improvement. The ball was getting forward quicker. Having two strikers up front in Washington and Waghorn. I mean, obviously Washington was kind of coming in from the left a little bit. It was out. I'm not entirely sure what the system was, which I think was a good thing because I think it was quite fluid. But I thought we just looked a lot more mobile and most importantly, Mendes Lang, who is our best attacking threat in the team without doubt and is probably one of the best attacking threats in the whole division. We had him in his best position, which was high up on the right-hand side. And the first half, I thought we were really good. And if we could have kicked on from that, we could have easily won 2 or 3 nil. But second half, I felt we started the second half slowly and never really kind of recovered from that. Obviously, Waghorn and Washington can't do 90 minutes yet. I think there's quite a few players in that team that can't really do 90 minutes yet. So they flagged and they were our kind of outlet throughout most, well, particularly the first half and the beginning of the second half. So we ended up sitting very deep, and I know Paul Warne said after the game that we defended crosses really well, we defended corners really well, which we did to an extent. They also had their chances, right? We could easily have conceded an equaliser in the last 20 minutes. So we rode our luck a little bit and we got away with it. But the 3 points are all important. Performance in the first half showed, I think, a way forward, particularly at home, in terms of how we can play more kind of a 4-4-2 or a 4-3-3. I think that's the way we should go at home, particularly the injuries. But yeah, the second half was pretty lacking, but they did what they needed to do.
What actually was the formation, Kutch, from what you can actually see from the team that came out? Because the defensive players were Jake Rooney, Aaron Cashin, Curtis Nelson, Craig Forsyth. Some saw it as a back three with Rooney and Cashin and Nelson, and then Foz and possibly Mendes Lang as wing back, some sort as a back four with those players. I guess it doesn't really matter in some ways, but so much discussion in the week about Warne sticking rigidly to his favoured 3/5 at the back. Did he still do that against Fleetwood from what you could tell, or was it more of like a fluid 3/4?
Yeah, so the way that they set up to start with, at first, I was convinced that it was kind of a 3-5-2, but with Mendes Lang very high up attacking, more like a right wing forward than a right wing back, you know, starting up very high and Jake Rooney supporting. And then the defence would shift across. So then you'd have, Forsyth would kind of come over to kind of a left centre back role. But Forsyth was also getting high up the pitch as well. So that's why I thought it did look like a 3-5-2 to start with. But then the more the game went on, particularly towards the end of the first half and the start of the second half, it looked more like a 4-4-2 with Thompson out left and Washington up front. But Washington was out wide left a lot as well. So I thought it was fluid in the first half and it worked really well, because when Mendes Lang went really far forward, kind of Forsyth would slot in at left back and Rooney would support him along the right wing, and he'd have Nelson and Cash in the centre backs. But we would also see Forsyth popping up at the back post, you know, as we'd love to see him do. So I thought first half it probably was a four, but a very attack. Both, you know, Rooney was pretty attacking and Forsyth was pretty attacking, and Mendes Lang was high up. I thought it was a pretty fluid system. The only kind of mainstays was Nelson and Cash in centre backs. And then Smith and Hearn were pretty central, and Waghorn was pretty central. Other than that, people were moving about quite a bit.
So I'm going to translate pretty fluid system as we don't know.
Well, I watched the whole game, and I changed my mind about four times during the first half exactly what was going on. But yeah. that wasn't a negative.
We had quite a few responses when I tweeted at the start after the team news, like, look, what is that shape? I had people saying, oh, it's a 4-2-3-1, it's a 3-5-2. I had someone suggest a 3-1-2-2-2. I don't even know how that looks. Tom?
Yeah, it's almost Football Manager-esque what you're talking about there, Kutch. You can see the arrows like going left, right and centre with every sort of like player's position. But I think if you consider the balance of the side, having had Wilson and Ward both injured for today, and therefore you're playing Mendes Lang on the right-hand side, he certainly is not a right wing-back. We saw that last year. And you want to play him further forward because it's much more dangerous when he picks the ball up 40 yards away from the opposing goal and drives it to defence. However, you think about the left-hand side, the balance, and Craig Forsyth popped up at the back post, as you said, a few times this season already. He's scored a goal, could have maybe scored two against Wigan on the first day and had other chances in the other games. But he's much more defensively minded. So you almost say, okay, left back, we're going to sort of sit in a little bit deeper and we're going to allow maybe Thompson or Howerton to move out into the left-hand side of the in the midfield. But we're going to allow Mendes Lang space. So no centre midfielder is going to really move out to that right-hand side. And we're going to try and create one-on-one situations where Mendes Lang can get forward and beat a man. Whereas on the left-hand side, we want to create overlaps. So you get someone receiving the ball like Howerton or Thompson and then getting Forsyth on the wing and trying to get across him from that position, because Forsyth's not going to beat someone like Mendes Lang would beat someone. So, yeah, it feels a bit imbalanced, but I do see the reasoning and the necessity for having to play that shape at the moment.
Yeah, and I meant to mention before that I just listened to Paul Warne's BBC Derby interview, and they didn't follow up on it, but he said that the system, he described it as a loaded system. I think it was loaded system, which I took to mean kind of overloading the right-hand side. You know, Rooney was supporting, Mendes Lang was very high up, and Waghorn was out there quite a bit as well to link up the play. And I think that's what he meant. They definitely, the vast majority of attacks in that first half came down the right-hand side, you know, with Rooney supporting, overlapping, playing good balls to Mendes Lang, putting balls in himself. So I think that they were just purely concentrating everything down that side. And then Forsyth was kind of getting to that back post as well.
Yeah, and I think the overload is really important in the modern game, because if you consider, I don't know if any of you have watched Man City so far this year, but if you look how high Ederson plays as a goalkeeper, it's ridiculous. He basically plays as an auxiliary centre-back when Man City are in possession. And the idea for that is that the centre-back can then push on into midfield and then create the overloads of midfield and basically swamp the team and push them even further back, because you're so confident you're going to keep the ball that you essentially don't need a goalkeeper. It's a wasted position. In there. It's obviously huge high risk, but that's how good Man City are. And I'm not saying that Derby are going to even try to replicate that. But at the same time, it's trying to understand, like, we are thinking we're aiming for promotion. That's what we're aiming for. So like, we need to therefore be on the front foot, and we're going to accept that some teams are going to come in to try and hit us on the counter, and they're going to have like a low block where they're going to play 4-5-1 or 4-4-2, and they're going to have two banks of four in front of us. We're going to have to break that down. We're going to have to be a little bit risky to do that. And we've tried to do that. And I think the classic example is Wigan. We tried to do that and we got caught badly, really badly, on three or four occasions, one of which led to a goal and one of which led to a really great chance. And that's going to have to be the risk reward. That the players are still getting used to that system. And I think when it does come good, I'm still very confident that that will be successful this season.
On the three at the back then, Tom, because it is Warren's favoured system, as we know, and it seems like he does kind of want to stick to it, although we've talked about it there being fluid. The thing that bothers me is that, look, what, we conceded, what, six goals this season, two in our previous three home games. Half of them have just been, or three of those goals have just been catastrophic defensive errors that you can't legislate for, like Sonny Bradley against Wigan, undercooked back pass, Callum Elder against, I think it was against Blackpool in the Cup, like disastrous backwards header, Curtis Nelson against Oxford, completely telegraphed ball through the middle. Like, I'm not saying if those errors didn't happen that we would have got something from those games, but I just find it incredibly hard to believe that players like that with that much experience are going to carry on dropping clangers like that all season. So I'm going to sort of try and be glass half full and say that we will improve in that regard. But I think it's sort of happening, Tom, because when you have a back three, there's maybe a bit more of an onus on them to be able to pick a pass and be comfortable on the ball and play across the width of the pitch, because the three of them are covering what four players would be covering before. So, like, look, can you try and explain to us the pros and cons of a back three and why you think we've been getting it so wrong, or why it has been going wrong this season for us?
Yeah, it's definitely very different playing in a back four to playing in a back three or a back five. Even though you might think if you're playing in a back five, you've got more players there, there is extra responsibility for you to go forward, and there is an emphasis on you moving forward as a defender. And that's where we've seen someone like Nelson. He put in a brilliant ball, I think it was for Forsyth in the Wigan game, where he stepped forward into the midfield position and crossed it in nicely. We also saw Sonny Bradley coming out of defence and trying to put pressure onto the into the midfield in that first game as well. The thing that I find that we're maybe not doing quite right is that there doesn't seem to be someone who takes responsibility to sit. Now, the team that I coach is a school team, so I'm not claiming to be anything, any sort of tactical mastermind, but I've always got someone who's a sitter. I'm like, you don't go beyond the halfway line. You're always last man. You're always thinking about what happens if you screw up. And that's essentially the basic message that I would give to that player. And you need to sit there, and the other two players are able to be a bit more sort of forward thinking. What it seems at the moment with Derby is that I've seen Sonny Bradley like come out of the centre of the three, the back three, and like pressing, and then the two other centre backs are also pressing. So it ends up that we've got someone who is unmarked in the halfway line. And I think it was Callum Lang who went through for Wigan, who missed a chance while Smith made a good save. He was completely free and completely open, and that was because that individual players didn't quite recognise and understand their jobs and what they were needing to do. I felt it was a bit more balanced today with Derby, and it seemed like from sort of following and listening to it that we sort of understood a little bit more. We weren't caught as much on the break in the same way that we were against Wigan, the same way that we were against Oxford. And it does rely on a couple of things, playing a back five or playing a back three as we are at the moment. It relies on your wider centre-backs being able to pick a pass. It relies on your wider players being able to receive the pass. But it also relies on someone confident in the centre midfield to receive a ball under pressure and to give that ball quickly. And Derby have been much too slow so far this season. And if you're slow, it becomes predictable. And if you go back to the goal from Sonny Bradley's back pass against Wigan, Curtis Nelson's pass to Sonny Bradley is pretty bad, because he gives him only one option, and that's to go back to the goalkeeper. So if Curtis Nelson had a bit more confidence to play that ball wider, quicker, we'd have been away from that. If his pass was better to Sonny Bradley, he could have then gone to cash in. As it was, it wasn't, and Sonny Bradley completely messed it up, and it's totally his fault. But Cashin was out of position, Nelson was out of position, Wildsmith was out of position, out of goal. It was always going to lead to something there. So all of those sort of things link in. You've got to have that confidence and ability to play that position. Otherwise, you're going to end up conceding stupid goals like that.
So an up and down start for Derby, to say the least. More to come on the injuries in a second. It's not good news either, unfortunately. But don't forget, this season, we are, of course, on Patreon. You get an extra podcast each month. We'll send you free stuff in the post for joining up. Join our fantastic Discord community as well, and loads more benefits if you head over to patreon.com/Steve Bloomers Washing.
Hi, I'm Paolo Wanchop, and you're listening to Steve Bloomers Washing.
Wanchop the target here, and he's beaten Marshall to it. It must be. It is. And it's the little Italian again. Against the run of play, but they'll accept it. And it was Marshall's mistake that allowed Wanchop to make the cross, and Baiano did the rest.
Kutch, something I was going to bring you in on, just off the back of what Tom said there. We've talked on previous pods, and Chris Smith said on the last episode that Derby need a League One rat, or possibly even two of them. You've talked about the much-fabled and sought-after hard bastard, TM. Is Liam Thompson that player? I didn't expect myself to be saying this, but he was pretty impressive today, I thought, and he's ticking some, if not all, of the boxes that Paul Warne's looking for. However, Warne has still said he's looking for someone. So how does Thompson contribute to Derby this season, and how big a say could he have in being that final piece of the jigsaw?
I don't think he's the final piece of the jigsaw, but I think in a midfield three, and he showed it today, I think he's extremely valuable, and he is something we don't have in terms of that, this raw energy, legs, yeah, kind of, as Chris would say, kind of rats around, gets around people, nicks the ball. It's, you know, his final pass and his decision-making left a bit to be desired for, I think. And today there was a few frustrating moments, but look, we're in League One. No midfielder's going to have it all, because otherwise they wouldn't be in League One. So I thought he brought a lot of welcome energy to our midfield three, because even though Max Bird has, I think, got fitter and stronger and has got the game now to be up and down a bit more as a true number eight, as he showed against Burton in particularly. Otherwise, our other midfielders are all a bit one-paced. Harahan's one-paced. Smith is one-paced. They want to get the ball down and play it. And to be honest, neither of those have much more to their game as far as I can see at the moment. And so Thompson does bring something, another dimension to that midfield. And he has been used quite a bit kind of from the left, and he was out on the left a bit today, but he just got around the pitch and he kind of made things happen off, particularly off the ball. Like, he'd put players under pressure, he'd win tackles, and then he'd carry the ball as well, a bit like Jason Knight used to do. He carried the ball forward quite a bit. And took the pressure off us. So I think, particularly with the injury to Max Bird, I would like to see Liam Thompson starting most games now in that midfield three. I don't really want to see him at left wing back or in a number 10 position. I think that's madness. But if he's playing in a three or in the base of the two, maybe in a kind of 4-2-3-1 system, I think he's got a lot to offer this team, a lot to bring this team. And I still think that we need that hard bastard. And if we were to cash in on Aaron Cashin or Max Bird, then I would want to see funds prioritised in that area. Because we need someone who can break up the play. And someone on Discord today said, you know, we need someone who can play that George Fawn or John Eustace role. Now, unfortunately, there aren't players of that quality available, I think, in League One. But if you had someone that could do that kind of job, that would free up Conor Harahan to play a bit further forward and influence the game further forward, where he can make killer passes and get shots off. Because for me, at the moment, he's too deep. Yeah, he can spread the play a bit, but we're not playing great football. We need Conor Harahan further up pitch and in and around the box. And the way to do that is to have someone deeper who can kind of free him up.
Further up the pitch, though, Kutch, it was an interesting selection choice from Warne today. Like, James Collins dropped. He did come on for the last 10 and provided us extra legs and chased down loose balls and harried defenders to help us sort of see out the win. But Waggy and Washy, as nobody is calling them except you.
Yes. I tried really hard today to get that sticking.
Yeah, good luck with that. Waggy and the Wash. I'm going to try that instead. The little signs of a possible partnership there. I mean, sort of links up against Burton as well, and Waggon goals in consecutive games now after pulling one back against Oxford It was a bit of a ridiculous goal today, really. Some nice build-up from Derby before it gets to Connor Washington. And then I can't really decide, is it either an ingenious disguised reverse ball from Washington or is it an attempted shot, which is going 5 yards wide, that ends up at Michael Owen's feet?
Yeah, it was generously described by someone on Twitter as a combination of Waggy and Washy, which it definitely wasn't. It was an awful shot from Connor Washington, which I don't think would have even reached a goal if Waggy hadn't intervened. Martin Waghorn read it. He was in the right place. He took it well, turned quickly, and it was actually a very Martin Waghorn finish, I thought. I just thought both of those two together brought another dimension to our play. Washington was making those runs in behind that Paul Warren has spoken so much about. He was giving their defence something to think about. Obviously, much more mobile than James Collins. Waghorn's, I was sceptical of the value of signing Martin Waghorn. However, we did actually see that he's quite a good footballer at this level, right? He is technically quite good. I think we probably, maybe in the Championship, it didn't come across so well because you've got less time, you've got a better defenders. But I do think, he's called 2-2, right? So in terms of 2-2 starts, I think. I do think we're gonna see goals from Martin Waghorn this season, and Washington was a decent foil because he creates space not just for Waghorn but for other players in the team.
Yeah, Tom, I don't think anyone's under any illusions that any of our three current strikers will get anywhere near McGoldrick from last season. We still need one more, don't we? That's obvious.
Yeah, I still think we need another striker, but at the present time, agree with Kutch. I was very sceptical about Waghorn and the sort of viability of him signing and whether he's going to be a good enough player at this level. But actually, he is, and he obviously loves the club as well. He didn't want to leave when he did, and he only left because of the circumstances of what the club is. And the fact he's come in, he started and hit the ground running, that's really positive. I agree with you, Kutch. I think it's a Washington, it's not even a cross shot, is it? It's just a bad shot, and then Waghorn takes it brilliantly, really quick, makes the run inside because he's looking for that little reverse pass, and then he finishes it really well. So fair play to Waghorn, he's looking good. I think Collins, he needs to be sharp of his chances. If you think about the chance he had against Wigan when he received the ball, I think from Mendes Lang when it was maybe aimed for Bird, and he scuffed a shot off his left foot, which almost bemused the goalkeeper, and he got down to his left hand side just to turn it around the post just at the last minute. You think Waghorn tucks that away on his left foot. Collins, for me, at that time, should have taken it on his right foot and actually buried it. But that's the difference between those two strikers. I think Waghorn's got that quality and that class which has gone through his career that Collins doesn't have.
None of them are perfect. And, Washington had that last gasp chance from about 2 yards out against Oxford to snatch a point and missed his kick there. But anyway, I'm sure we could talk about the various chances those three have missed for a very long time. Kutch mentioned it in passing earlier, Max Bird, Dom Dietrich at the BBC Radio Derby dropped the, I'm going to call it a bombshell because it is terrible news that both him and Kane Wilson and Joe Ward are all out for at least 8 weeks. So, God, it's horrendous news to get at this point in the season. I think with their various contributions, Ward in particular was one of the few bright sparks in the first half against Oxford before it all went wrong. But they could all optimistically, I guess, be back at the earliest for Charlton at home on Saturday, October the 14th. But more realistically, probably Shrewsbury away on the 21st or Stevenage away on October the 28th. So, look, Tom, best case scenario, all three of those players are going to miss 10, probably 11 games. Can we cope without those three players for almost a quarter of the league season?
It's going to be difficult. And one of the problems we had last year is we didn't have a right back. We signed two, which was good business. And then both of them were injured for the same amount of time. So I definitely think it's going to be difficult. And that's up to Paul Warren to then utilise his squad effectively and to put a system and into place that is effective for us. And I think he's done that today. No league is won by the end of September or early October, let's face it. So regardless of where we are at that point, it's effectively irrelevant because the season is a marathon, it's not a sprint. And we need to keep picking up points, keeping tabs with those teams above us. And we've even seen from results today that teams like Wigan, teams like Oxford, teams like Barnsley and Peterborough and stuff like that, they're going to win games, they're going to lose games, and it's going to be a very open league. And it's there for a team to then come out of nowhere to to have a good unbeaten run through the middle of the season, late in the season, to then take this lead by the scruff of the neck. And so, yeah, for me, yes, we will absolutely still be in the running come October, November, when these players come back. And it's a big loss, but I think we can deal with it.
I think as well, going back to Tom's point about nothing's won in September or October, like, you look at the table, obviously people are very upset with how we've played, and we were awful against Oxford, and we were awful in the cup against Blackpool. And Wigan, I thought we more than held our own, and we're very unlucky not to at least get a point in that game. We're still only 3 points off the top, right? If we were 3 points off the top with 10 games to go, or even 3 points out of the playoffs with 10 games to go, you'd be expecting that we could overturn those 3 points, right, by the end of the season. So nothing's won or lost now. The injuries are horrendous, particularly, I'll come back to Matt Spur, but particularly with the two right wing backs, because we've literally, there were two signings signed so we could play with a 3-5-2 with Paul Warne's favoured system. Some people might see those injuries almost as a blessing because they were so anti that system. But there's no doubting that along with Bird, Ward was probably our best player in the first few games of the season. Against Wigan particularly, he got so many balls into the box. It was ridiculous, and they were good balls into the box. It's just there wasn't anyone on the end of them. So I think that's a real shame. But Rooney did well today at right back, and Mendes Lang is a threat down the right wing, as we know. So I think there's ways to kind of get around that for a couple of months. Max Bird is interesting because that injury, it can change so much in the squad makeup and the strategy in the remaining couple of weeks of this transfer window. Because for me, Max Bird's injury makes it way more likely we're going to have to cash in on Aaron Cashin, because now I think even more so Warne's desperate to get that midfielder in. And if we are going to go back to a back four, maybe we don't need an extra centre back. And maybe you can go, okay, we can sell Cashin for free, 3.5 million without a loan back. And then we can use those funds to invest in a striker, invest in a midfielder. And if he wanted it still, maybe another centre-back or a loan for a right wing-back. So I think the Bird injury, if even it might keep Bird at the club longer. It might even encourage him to sign a new contract, because no one, particularly a young player, wants to be having a semi-serious injury and be out of contract at the end of the summer. So I think that might encourage Bird to sign a new contract. And I think it makes it more likely for us to cash in on I keep saying cash in on Aaron Cashin. I'm not doing that deliberately. but to sell Aaron Cashin to get funds to improve other parts of the squad. And I'm not against that.
It's bizarre, isn't it? Like, I'm fascinated to know what the bookies make of our chances now, because like, we seem to be pre-season favourites with Bolton for the top two based on the assumption that we would fill out the squad a bit more by the end of the window. And not only have we not done that, but we've lost two of the players that we even bought in the first place. I'll come back to you in a second, Kutch, but a few more five-word reviews on Fleetwood. Plenty of those coming in the past hour or two. Classic Only Child, one of our patrons, he said, "See you in 8 weeks." Joe Stevenson said, "Made that look hard work." Daniel Brooks said, "Better, but still miles off." Jason Hawkins, not feeling great. He said, "Completely lacking in all departments." Daniel Warwick, one of our patrons. "Hey, Dan," he said, "won a must-win game." Stephen on Twitter said, "Got away with that one." Leon Hendricks said, "Papering over the cracks, maybe." Ashton Wright said, "Not a top three team." James Hutchinson said, "A platform to build on." And Hayden said, "Job done, look to improve, Kutch."
Yeah, and one of the commenters there said, you know, lacking in all departments. So I don't necessarily disagree with that, right? But the way to turn that round is, yeah, fine, lacking in all departments, and I'm looking at the table, and we're 3 points off the top, we're only four games gone, we won two, lost two. Like, what's the big deal? Like, we're not playing very well. I'm sure we're going to play better for most of the season. And we've not lost four, have we? We've not lost three and drawn one. We've still picked up a good away win. Have we played one game away from home in the league and we've won it? I think, going back to the formation conversation, I think 3-5-2 could be the way to go away from home. But maybe at home, we need to be thinking 4-4-2, 4-3-3. And that wouldn't be the first time that a team plays one way away from home and another way at home. So I think look, I haven't been impressed with us at the start of the season. It's been way below my expectations, but I'm not panicking because there's way more to come from that team, and I think there's way more to come from the management staff.
There's no need to panic just yet. There's no need to sort of like overreact to anything. Yes, some of the performances have been disappointing, and that is more concerning, which is where I agree with what Anton said on the Discord earlier today. He was like, I actually want more of a performance today. And I think we got that in the first half, but not maybe not for the whole 90. But I do think it's coming. I do think this Derby team is capable of putting together a string of results and building on that confidence and building that togetherness. I haven't seen anything from any team so far in League One that goes, okay, we're in a bit of problem here. We're going to need to get 100 points like they did last season.
Whichever way we do it, you have a slightly grim sense of inevitability that it might be without Aaron Cashin. Four bids Brighton have put in for Cash so far, according to John Percy, which, I don't know, the cynic in me says that, you know, they're going to come back again. They're going to get there eventually. I don't feel as that many times when a team bids for a player that many times and doesn't get them at some point. So I guess the biggest question for you both is, what's an acceptable fee? Like, you know, look, he's touted by a lot of people as one of the most promising centre-backs in the division. I thought he was an actual full international, but he's definitely an under-21 international. Plenty of experience under his belt already since making his debut a couple of seasons ago. But his contract has only got 1 year left on it. So I guess the plus point is that we do have a couple of centre-backs in, and Rooney seems to be progressing, look good on the ball today. And you'd imagine he'll be dropped in the deep end if Cashin does end up leaving. But Tom, you first, is there a figure that you'd be happy with in terms of Cashin leaving for Brighton?
Tony Bloom's a great negotiator, isn't he? The owner of Brighton. He got, so I think it was 80 million that Cicedo was meant to be going for, and he got 115 million. So I reckon 35 million is a reasonable figure. that's how much more that he got for Moses Cicedo than he should have done. Considering Liverpool didn't have enough for Jude Bellingham, but then did have enough for him, but didn't quite have enough because Chelsea are breaking the laws all over the place. Realistically, though, I think 3-4 million for a League One centre back is going to be good money. It'd be a shame to see him go, but I think a sale, but with a loan back, would be a good sort of like long term investment. As long as we can then spend that money, it doesn't seem to be the case that we were able to spend anything given the sales that we've made already with Jason Knight, for example. So I would certainly be looking for the 3 million mark. I think it would be a good figure.
Kutch, how many League One rats could you buy for £35 million?
Well, yeah, a lot. A whole team full. Probably a whole squad full. We don't need that many. But I'd be interested to know, and it's the kind of thing we probably should have looked up. But, you know, there's been some pretty big, there'd be some decent signings of League One strikers for Championship clubs going for kind of, I guess, the £3-5 million mark, possibly. But I don't know how many centre-backs have been sold in this division for more than £3 million. He's got 1 year left in his contract, which is a factor. But what I'm most fascinated by and intrigued by and pleased by, I guess, is that Brighton, who we all know are probably the best in the country, if not Europe, if not the world at the moment, in terms of recruiting, seeing value and recruiting players and selling them on and developing them, are interested in Aaron Cashin. I think that's a huge kudos and huge compliments to Aaron Cashin and everyone involved in his development over the last 5 years. But yeah, when John Percy put that news out, he said Derby were looking for £3 million plus and a guaranteed loan back. If you were to go along with that, I would say, and this might, people might think this is low, but I'm very much thinking there's 1 year left from his contract and he walks away for minimal fee next year, and Brighton know that. I think £3 million with a loan back, I'd take, or 3.5 plus without a loan back, I'd take. I guess Brighton's plan, why they might be reluctant to loan him back, would be they want to send him to a Championship club, was my guess.
I just think it's not unusual for teams to have players going into their last year of their contract, and we're not talking like mega value. And I know that Cashin is probably one of Derby's better sort of value players, and I know Bird is in a similar sort of position. I'm not worried about them being their last year of their contract because they're both young, and so therefore there'll be a tribunal which will settle the fee, which teams will be sceptical on because it could settle it in any sort of way, good or bad for either team. And I think Derby will also offer both of those teams both those players' contracts. And I think there's also a good reason for them to stay, given the fact that they both come through the ranks with Derby, especially if we were to get promoted. If we're not to get promoted, I'd expect to lose Cashin and Bird next season, regardless of what happens. If we do get promoted, I would expect to be in a stronger position to keep them both. So I'm not worried about the contract situation. I think Derby have got every right. We sold Jason Knight and we've offloaded a couple of other people from the books who are probably on high wages, like McGoldrick, whether we wanted to or not. So therefore, I think that we're not in a position that we need to sell. And therefore, yeah, 3 million plus a loan back. Good. 3.5-4 million pounds and not coming back. Fine. I would take that money now, because I think we could get another centre back who would do a job enough at League One position, and get a striker and maybe a centre midfielder who would also fill those gaps. The League One VAT, as Kutch was talking about, that would come in from that money.
Yeah, the concern is, Kutch, can we spend any money that we get, for whether it's for cash in or for Bird? I mean, I looked up what Warner said about it most recently, and I think it was on the in one of his pre-match presses where he was asked the question, can you spend the money? And he said, hopefully. It doesn't really fill you with confidence, does it? And I think you noticed that he was talking about in a recent post-match just how difficult and complicated the recruitment situation can be for clubs in League One at the moment.
I think I always take with a pinch of salt when, and I hope we should be taking with a pinch of salt, what managers say when they're asked about budgets and what they can spend, because you don't want to be playing your hand, right? You don't want to be saying, oh yeah, if we get £3.5 million to Aaron Cashin, we can spend all of it. Because when you put a bid in for a centre-back at a lower, a League One club has got a good centre-back that you want, they're going to go, well, we know you've got £3.5 million to spend. So I do think we shouldn't always read at face value what managers say. I hope that Paul Warren isn't playing, I would hope he wasn't saying, oh yeah, we can spend all of it, whether he can or can't, because I just think you don't want to show your hand. But yeah, he was saying, it was really interesting actually, the press conference. I know people, I think, are starting to get a little bit tired of Paul Warren's press conferences and his interviews, because as the team aren't doing as well as we'd like, some of his jokes and stuff can maybe wear a bit thin. But he is still, I do still think he's very honest, and he does give you a good view into what's going on behind the scenes. And he was talking in the pre-match press conference on Thursday or Friday about kind of the recruitment process and what goes into it. And it was quite fascinating, because it was maybe a lot more thorough than we think or other people think, in terms of, I think he said 11 or 15 of them around the table almost every day, going through targets, discussing. Then basically when it comes down to it, him, Mark Thomas and Stephen Pearce agree what the offer is going to be, whether it's a transfer fee or a contract offer for someone, what they can afford to do, what their target is. You might offer someone a contract, they then go away and see, no, I want to get more money, and they come back 2 weeks later, they haven't been able to get more money from somewhere else, they come back to you and see if they can still join you. So it is a long process, and obviously it's a competitive market, right? So I think he has been frustrated. I think we've all been frustrated. When we did the pre-season pod in Tom's Garden, and we were kind of talking about the signings of Joe Ward and Callum Elder and Washington and Vickers and Bradley and Nelson, we all thought that was pretty good going, right? But I think we also thought that was the start or the first half of recruitment, and nothing's really come in since. And I think Warren probably thought the same, and he hasn't been able to add, apart from Martin Waghorn, hasn't been able to add on as many extra additions as he would have hoped. And I think that's what we're lacking. So I expect there will be movement in the next couple of weeks. I think there has to be movement in the next couple of weeks. And if that's helped by a Cashin or a Bird leaving to fund extra movements in, I'm kind of for it. The extra point I was going to make about Cashin was, is having Cashin or not the difference between us getting promoted or not, or getting in the playoffs or not? For me, it's not. I think Nelson and Bradley haven't started the season well, but I still think there's good defenders in there. I thought Nelson looked much better today in the back four. For me, Cashin isn't the be-all and end-all. So if you can get £3.5 million for him and invest that in other areas of the squad where we need it, then happy days.
Yeah, probably in the cold light of day, like £3.5 million for Cashin is decent money. Look, before we move on to a final little quiz, we're going to bring a quiz back. We haven't done a quiz in a long time. Don't forget, you can drop us a line on the socials. We are on Facebook and Instagram, and also Twitter at Steve Bloomer Pod. I'm not going to call it X. I just can't bring myself to do it. I'm just going to carry on calling it Twitter, like nothing's changed. So get in touch if you want to give us a follow and see more content from us. But last few minutes, let's roll back the years and do something we like to call win, lose, or schnorr. Love that theme tune so much. So this is our game show where Tom and Kutch have to guess whether a Derby County result from years gone by was a win, a loss, or a schnorr. So a simple one for you this week, just three games. So best of three or first of three or whatever, or however many you get out right out of three. I don't know. I did this last minute. So I'll give you the first game first, and I'll get an answer from each of you. Southend United at home, September 30th, 2006. Quick fire, Kutch, win, lose or schnorr?
Lose.
Tom, win, lose or schnorr?
Win.
The correct answer was a win. It was a 3-0 win.
Was it Freddie Eastwood, Southend United?
Could, may well have been. You don't get any bonus points for pointing that out, even if it is true.
He was banging goals in then. He's very good in Football Manager at the time.
0-1 to Tom. Game number two, Ipswich at home on August 14th, 2004. Tom, win, lose or schnorr?
August 2004, Burnley home. I'm going to go schnorr.
Schnorr. Kutch, any advance?
Probably wrong, but I think I might have been at this game. I'm going to say win.
The correct answer was win. Kutch is back in the game. It was a 3-2. Stop naming random players. a 3-2 win for Derby. I think Marco Wright got one of them and Idiarke's got another one of them. Last one, the decider. Leeds United at home, October 5th, 2013. Win, lose or schnorr?
2013 would have been Nigel... October 2013, so that would have been Nigel Clough. Still, or maybe McLaren just took over, but Clough went on an amazing run against Leeds, which was like 10 in a row or 10 unbeaten or something. So, and we were good that season, obviously. So, I'm gonna say win.
I'm also going win, which means that it's gonna be a snore.
The correct answer was win, so it's a tie break 2-2.
Who scored for Derby that day? What was the result?
It's funny you say that because there's a theme. For those three results, lightning round, can either of you name the theme? What connects all three of those? So Southend, 3-0 home win in September 2006. Ipswich at home.
The start of an unbeaten run.
First home win of the season.
Tom is incorrect. Kutch has got the points. He's nailed
yes.
it. The correct answer was not only first home win of the season, but first home win of the season in a season where we either got promoted or got into the playoffs. I'm trying to end on a positive note. See what I'm doing here?
I thought maybe it was, also my other thought was first win of a new regime or a first game of a new regime.
Kutch seals a famous quiz victory in win, lose or schnorr. Before we go, I have to mention that we did a quiz episode on Patreon recently, Rams Mastermind, which I think you may have seen a clip of. So if you're a fan of that sort of quiz and trivia nonsense that we do, then do check that out. You can even have a free trial. So if you like, you can listen, sign up to Patreon, and then unsubscribe. I'd obviously prefer it if you didn't do that, but it is an option. We'll be back in a couple of weeks. Thanks for your time.
Always a pleasure.
And Tom, safe travels in Mallorca. Say hi to Omar Mascarell. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks very much. All the best.
Back soon.